Hello and welcome to the IABC Ottawa podcast, The Voice. Ottawa is one of the International Association of Business Communicators' largest chapters in the world, and we are pleased to bring you a podcast that covers everything from marketing, strategy, social media, crisis comms, public affairs, and whatever else is relevant to communicators. I'm your host, Sherry Ask. Hello and welcome to IABC Ottawa's The Voice, episode 127, How to Host Accessible Meetings and Events. I am so excited for this episode topic, and I realize that I probably always say that, but I learned a lot researching this episode and putting it together. And it is such an expansive topic that I actually have not just one interview, but two for you guys. So a bit of background for you guys. I had already been thinking about doing something around inclusion for this month's episode, and I was actually going to focus on how to create inclusive communications products. And that's when I read an article by one of our guests this week that you're going to hear from, Jordana Globerman, and she wrote about how to host accessible meetings. And Jordana got me thinking about how the way we need to approach accessibility and inclusion needs changes in a world where so many of us are working from home and holding meetings and events virtually. So that includes steps to make sure people with disabilities can take part. It also includes doing a bit of a rethink of things that affect everybody. And I'll use timing as an example. So say your team has always had a 9 a.m. meeting to start the day, and that used to be the best time to hold it. Is it still that way now that we're working from home? So people with young kids now may be doubling as at-home teacher's assistants, and they may not be available at that time. Have we changed any of those practices in this new setting? Even for IABC, we host a lot of events at night. Has the best time after work changed? For conferences and for our work days, have we thought about the time we need to leave between meetings or online events so that people can get up and walk so they can go to the bathroom? And timing is just one example. Obviously, there are so many. Just different things we need to think about, how we communicate in these meetings and how we share information. So that is sort of the idea behind this month's episode. To start things off, you're going to hear from Jordana Globerman, who I mentioned. She has a background in designing innovative and accessible services with the public service. She also has a background in graphic facilitation and what's called drawing for inclusion. And she talks a bit about that. It's fascinating. It sort of is about changing how we communicate information during meetings and events so we can make it accessible to more people. And then after that, you're going to hear from Zachary Weeks. Zachary is an accessibility advocate and a member of IABC's Edmonton chapter. And Zachary and I talk about what he's experienced and seen in the accessibility community since we've shifted to virtual meetings and events, and also more of the logistics. So things like what platforms prioritize accessible services and what you can do to make sure your event is set up to accommodate people with disabilities. So we're going to get into the interviews, but before I do have two quick housekeeping notes. The first is that you may notice the audio sounds a little different on my end. I normally record in a studio, which is empty and does allow for social distancing, but given the current stay-at-home order in Ottawa and everybody making an effort to limit their trips outside of the house, it didn't seem appropriate to go in for this month's episode, even for the professional equipment. So that's why it may sound a little different than normal. So bear with me. I think you'll still get a lot out of this episode. And the second note I had is that while we do have two interviews for this episode, there is unfortunately no lightning round, and I'm sorry. I know everyone loves the lightning round. Please forgive me. It didn't work out timing-wise for this episode. We haven't gotten rid of it though, so please tune in again next month and maybe we will have a mega lightning round to make up for it. And that's all of my housekeeping notes, and I have spoken enough. So here are my conversations with Jordana Globerman and Zachary Weeks about how to host accessible meetings and events. Joining me now is Jordana Globerman. Jordana is a service designer for the Government of Canada, as well as an experienced graphic facilitator. Jordana, welcome to The Voice, and thank you for joining me.
Hi, Sherry. Thanks for having me.
So to start, why don't you give listeners a bit of a background on your experience and your background?
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. So I've worked as a designer in a few different capacities for several years, first in the UK and then in Canada. And so I trained first as an illustrator, and then I got into strategy design, working with several consultancies, as well as service design and graphic facilitation. I now run my own company doing graphic facilitation, and I also do service design and sort of strategic collaborative design for the government. So lots of different ways to apply design.
And can you explain a bit for people who don't know what graphic facilitation is, like how it works in a modern day setting?
Sure. Yeah. So a lot of people might be most familiar with sort of those whiteboard animations that you see where someone is explaining something and notes are being taken. And this process is like that, except it happens live. So I go into a meeting or a workshop or like a conference and presentation. And as people are talking in real time, I draw up those sort of key messages into a visual narrative. And so this could be like a big mural, or in this day and age, something that I create digitally on my iPad. But it's a nice way for people to have a takeaway of the key messages, but people to also integrate the information if they're more visual thinkers or something like that.
Jordana, after all of the different projects that you've worked on, what were some of the takeaways that you had about accessibility? Like, how did this make you come to see the importance of inclusion in meetings in a different way?
Sure. So I think you kind of touched on two things there. So the inclusion aspect, I think, is sort of what led me into the interest in accessibility. I think working first, you know, in graphic facilitation, I've always liked that there are a few different ways that visuals can make a more inclusive meeting. So the first being, it sort of like flattens a hierarchy. You see everything that everyone says on the same plane. So there's no hierarchy in the messaging. And I always like that. I also like that you could depict things using metaphors and ways that responded to different people. And so you could cross certain like linguistic and cultural barriers in that way. And so I've always been interested in that. And then in working with the government through labs there and working with citizens on projects related to accessibility, I became more interested in just the various different ways we can modify our communication and respond to different people's needs to make sure everybody is included.
What do you find that graphic facilitation is best for?
Yeah, I think graphic facilitation is best for really complex information where you're trying to parse out what are the key messages, like what are the most important things to retain. And then you're also trying to make them relatable. So having something visual that's sort of mapped out where you can cluster themes visually that can help people understand really dense concepts, but also using things like visual metaphor can help people relate those concepts to their day-to-day, which also helps them retain things a bit better because they have a more reference points for it. And like in general, most people have more than one learning style. So, you know, they could be visual learners, but they could be auditory and visual, or they could be kinetic learners. And so the more different ways you offer people to engage with content, the more chance that they're actually going to be able to retain it.
Yeah, I find this concept so interesting. I'm a visual learner naturally. So I also I feel like this would help me so much with memory. Just because say someone was, you know, designing or drawing out our organizational process or our protocols or whatever. I don't know if that's an example of the kind of thing you would do, but just to have that
in my mind as opposed to just words, I think would be so helpful.
Yeah, exactly. Like processes, systems, all those things are great things to be captured visually.
So from there, you actually published an article recently with a number of takeaways that you had after reflecting on your various experiences. What made you decide to write that article? I should say it's about, you published an article about how to host accessible meetings.
So I had recently come off a project with the government where I was doing lots of workshops related to accessibility with folks with a lot of very diverse needs and diverse disabilities. And so a lot of work went into sort of planning these meetings that people could engage with on different levels. And I was working, like coming off of this basically when COVID hit. And so I was thinking about a lot of the principles that we applied to our workshops, and I just thought they were relevant to more and more people, because more and more people were sort of dealing with different responsibilities, but also like new disabilities. Like people were kind of suffering the mental health effects of being thrown into a pandemic. And so there was more and more people, and also like physical health issues if they were getting COVID. And so there was more and more need, like more and more people in organizations who could benefit from these organizations taking a more accessible approach to their meetings. And I mean, like that's a principle of inclusive design and accessibility in general, which is that, you know, this isn't a small portion of the population that is excluded by having designs only fit sort of like one type of person. Most of us will have some sort of disability in our lifetime. So having these approaches to meetings is really, really crucial to making sure people are included and like they feel good and like on a moral level, but also to productivity and allowing people to sort of do their best in the office.
Yeah, when I read it, I was really struck by just thinking about how you have to adapt your considerations for inclusion and accessibility for an environment where so many of us are working from home. Whereas before, like we talked about accessibility and inclusion at the office, but it really is different when you're, you know, doing video calls or audio calls all day long and you're in, you know, a home space. And I love this. You took an approach that, you know, they're small things you can do. They're easy. They're not huge, and they can make a really big difference. Can you share some of the ones that really stood out to you that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, of course. I'd be happy to. So one big thing is to offer like different modes of communication and engagement. And I guess I was talking about that a little bit with the visuals, but I mean, you wouldn't want to rely on visuals, and you always want to make sure people have other ways of integrating information as well. So, you know, if you have a graphic facilitator there, you're also going to have a facilitator who's like speaking through things. You might have, like if it's a fully accessible meeting, you might have closed captioning as well. But in general, like this is a good principle to apply to meetings, because some people learn differently, but also people prefer different ways to express themselves. Some people want to use a chat function online. Some people would rather speak up. So I think those like multiple options is always a good thing. And another thing was sort of this more collaborative approach to meetings. So, you know, deciding that the time works for everyone, asking that it works, not leaving it to other people to come to you, asking people if, you know, they need sort of accommodations or any sort of accessibility options so they don't have to come to you and the burden doesn't always fall on them. And also being sort of collaborative in like your objectives, like saying if you want to get somewhere by a certain point in the meeting, agreeing on that at the outset so people are sort of aware of where they're going to and can voice if, you know, if that's a bit too burdensome for a meeting, or if, you know, it could be more ambitious, different things like that. And then finally, I think a big thing, and it goes with that collaborative approach, approach is like reporting back what you've heard. So it's really important, you know, if you're trying to glean information or prioritize things with people, to then report that back so you can validate that you're actually understanding it correctly. Because sometimes it gets lost in translation, and that's where people can feel excluded, even though you've sort of done your best to include them.
Yeah, there were so many good points there. Is there anything else, Jordana, that you wanted to say about your experience with inclusive meetings?
No, I mean, I guess I'd just say I can recognize now it does become hard online. And I guess that's also why I wrote that article, is I was hoping by giving sort of simple things, people could, you know, have like baby steps to take. I do know if you're trying to hold a fully accessible meeting online, it's quite difficult, especially if you want a more collaborative workshop with lots of folks. Getting all the different supportive tools you need can be a real challenge. And I guess it's just important to just be aware that people are dealing with new challenges, and to be sort of as flexible as you can with them right now, and as compassionate as possible, because we're all sort of going through it.
Yeah, absolutely. Jordana, thank you so much. I really appreciate you you taking the time to share your thoughts with me.
Thank you, Sherry. It's a real pleasure. And yeah, I'm really happy to be included in this. Thank you so much.
And that was Jordana Globerman, a graphic facilitator with a background in designing innovative and accessible services. If you're interested, you can find the article she wrote about hosting accessible meetings at apolitical.ca. We'll be back in a moment.
Connect with people and insights you need to thrive in your career. With an IABC Ottawa membership, you will be able to network with like-minded peers who work in fields from digital strategy, media relations and internal communications, to crisis communications, marketing, stakeholder relations, public relations, and communication strategy. Joining IABC means you enjoy unparalleled access to member-only events and programs such as member meetups and a mentorship program. Sign up today. Visit us online at ottawa.iabc.com.
Joining me now is Zachary Weeks. Zachary is an accessibility consultant as well as a member of the IABC Ottawa Edmonton chapter. Zachary, thank you for joining me and welcome to The Voice.
Thanks so much for having me, Sherry. It's a pleasure to be here.
So to start, why don't you explain a bit of your background so that our listeners can get to know you better and where you're coming at this from?
Sure. So I actually live with cerebral palsy. I've been a wheelchair user my whole life. That said, you know, I've experienced some of the things that we're going to talk about here today rather more intimately than others. And, you know, I've turned, lemons into lemonade when it comes to, sharing these experiences on podcasts such as this, and other event planners. And, you know, I also had the opportunity to go into communications as well. So that's always a nice fit when you're needing to talk about important issues such as inclusion when it comes to events, like I said, that we'll be talking about.
So I'm curious, what have you noticed since the world has switched to sort of virtual digital first, where everything is online? Have things gotten more or less inclusive, do you think?
I think it's a bit of both. I think, you know, as a person with a disability, COVID has really, you know, changed the world for the better in that it was sort of the kick in the pants that everybody was hoping the world would get in terms of making things more inclusive. Being that we literally were forced to think outside the box and adapt our workspaces and how we carry out our day-to-day lives. On the other side, you know, there's all these great technologies that we're able to leverage, but some still need some tweaking to make sure that, it's as accessible as possible. It's that transfership or transferring of what we applied in, you know, our real life events, I'll call them, into the digital realm. Things like captioning, you know, making sure user interfaces are easy to navigate and understand. So I think it's been a bit of both, but I think a lot of other great things have come out of this pandemic as well. But when it comes to the event side and inclusion, it really forced some of the biggest players in the world to have to rethink their strategy and adapt.
Yeah, you mentioned the importance of you know, an inclusive interface and live captioning. Can you give me some other examples, I guess, of things that are sort of essential if you're going to have, if you're going to do one or two things? What makes the biggest difference, do you think, in terms of accessibility?
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a plethora that we can look at as sort of like the ultimate checklist. But I think, you know, if we could choose one or two, that would get us off to a great start. So on that point, you know, I mentioned this previously, the captioning within sort of presentations or meetings, that's always, you know, needed. You and I were talking earlier about how we wouldn't invite someone to a meeting and then allow them not to be able to listen to what was being said or an event or vice versa. The other thing is, you know, every event nowadays comes with some sort of level of engagement online. So making sure that your content online is readable by other technologies that people with varying disabilities use, such as screen readers for those who are blind, making sure that the website is accessible for registration, that sort of thing. And then, you know, the social media side of it is making sure that you're captioning your videos and that sort of thing, especially given that I think it's like 82% of the world now uses social without sound on. So those are a couple of things that I would suggest right off the hop.
Yeah, and it's, you know, listening to you, I realize there's almost two different streams to look at this from, because if you're planning a big event or maybe like a 3-day conference, you're going to probably contract out live captioning or live translations, you know, if you're doing something bilingually or multilingually. But there's also sort of just the day-to-day side of things, where we're now all in video meetings. Like, do those have live captioning or not? Do you know, or do you hear any feedback from people on certain platforms that are more, that prioritize inclusion and accessibility more, so they make live captioning more accessible or easy to add on?
Yeah, so I mean, my personal favorite that I've been introduced is Microsoft Teams. They have auto captioning already embedded. It's just a little function that you have to turn on within like a meeting. You know, like anything, it's based off of AI nowadays, so take it with a grain of salt. But to your point, if you're hosting like a online 3-day conference, you might want to look at contracting out what they call CART. So that's real-time captioning. And there's people that are specifically trained on how to provide those services to ensure that everyone is as included as possible. Again, making sure that things are a bit more accessible might be having things or copy information rather that's able to be increased or decreased in size, just for legibility. It's not just for old people, but you know, it's important that you have a variety of options, because nowadays accessibility isn't just ensuring that people place a ramp or you know, that there's an elevator. There's a whole plethora of different kinds of disabilities. Podcasts, for example, today's a great example. We can have this conversation where, you know, people who aren't affected with hearing disabilities or who are hard of hearing can still listen to how great the voice is and the content that you cover just by having transcriptions or captions built in to the podcast if you're listening online. Another easy way to sort of hack into that area, if you will, is to post your podcast on platforms like YouTube, where again they have built-in captioning that you can take advantage of, subtitling technology that's built in, easy to use. And yeah, it's a exciting time for people in the disability community on the technology front.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned that, because not only because we are speaking in a podcast and the best practice is to have a transcript, but if you're a small shop or you have a small budget, that hack of going to YouTube, anybody can upload to YouTube for free, and YouTube has built-in live captions. And that's something else to think about, I think, if you're doing, you know, events, because you can live stream on YouTube and it has built-in live captioning. So those sort of tools, like it just shows how easy it is. It doesn't have to cost a lot of money. These are steps you can take just by looking at your choices. But I also wanted to ask how often, one of the things that Jordana mentioned was the importance of making it so that the onus is never on the person with a disability to ask for accommodations. When you're online and you're signing up for an event, whether it's an IABC event or a conference or whatever it is, how often, Zachary, do you find that there's information about what accessibility options are available? Or how often do you get asked when you register, you know, do you require any accommodation? Do you find that that's commonplace now, or is that something that a lot of people still have to go seek out an event organizer for?
No, I you know, that's a great question. And the short answer is not very often, but it's getting better. You know, and I agree with Jordana in the fact that it shouldn't just be on the individual with the disability to identify and sort of set up your event for success to make them have a positive experience. That's like asking someone to, you know, go to the keg and have them cook their own steak.
That's a great example. Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, in the disability community, I mean, we're very open to having these conversations before the event happens, and doing exactly what we're doing today, in that, you know, okay, what do we need to do to have a event that is inclusive, but also from the communications side of things, communicating what we're doing to include everyone.
Yeah, no, it does. It's funny, like even in research, I've learned so much even researching for this episode. I went on and looked. I was like, well, can you add a question to your Eventbrite page? So you can ask, you know, do you require live captioning? Do you require XYZ? So that maybe, like, again, if you're a small shop, you don't have to contract it out for every event. But as soon as there's a need, you make sure it's not, you make sure it's accommodated, right? So that nobody is left out because you can't offer something. And I know that probably best practice would be to have it by defaults. Definitely just making that information available and making it easy to access so that there's no extra burden on the person who requires it, if that makes mm-hmm. sense.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Zachary, did you have anything else that you wanted to add or say?
No, I mean, this is a great opportunity to talk about how we can do better as IABC members. And, you know, I know one of the cornerstones at West here is always having pride in the events that we offer and the networking opportunities. So, I mean, I just encourage anyone that's planning an event or even a meeting or need some hot tips on accessibility or inclusion to reach out to their local advocates. Most of us are online. Same with the consultants. And, you know, it's just great to be here.
I love that. Hot tips on accessibility and inclusion. Mm-hmm. That could be the title of this episode. Oh, Zachary, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time. You definitely shared some insights that I'm going to take away from this about podcasting as well. So it was a pleasure.
Sure. And just before you go, with respect to the transcriptions, I understand that typing out our entire conversation might be a pain in the butt. So check out rev.com. That's sort of my go-to. And they can help you out with transcribing audio files or video files. There's a whole choice there. So yeah, hit them up if you're short on time.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I definitely will. Rev.com. That's a great suggestion for everybody in comms who might be doing a podcast. Thanks, Zachary.
Take care.
Well, that's it for this episode of the IABC Ottawa podcast, The Voice, episode 127. Thank you for listening. If you like this episode, please share it and send us a review or feedback. You can reach IABC Ottawa on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Our handle is at IABC Ottawa. We are also on LinkedIn. And you can check out our social and newly revamped website. It is ottawa.iabc.com. There's info there on all IABC Ottawa networking, professional development events, future meetups, and more. And lastly, if you haven't already, you should definitely subscribe to the IABC Ottawa newsletter. That's where you find out about everything that is upcoming so that you don't miss anything. There is a lot happening this year, even digitally, and you don't want to miss it. I am your host, Sherry Ask, and until next time, we're going to let the music play.